Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I am a editor, reporter, writer, whatever for ArizonaSports.com. I guess I added whatever to my job title. So I'm going to add to yours, Kevin Zimmerman. Hello, how are you?
Do we have to keep doing the intro with all those things? I mean, you could just...
We just do a lot of stuff here and
guy.
I want people to know.
We're guys.
Sports
work here.
Sports blog guy. That's me.
Web boy.
Web boy, ooh.
Blog like boy.
That. Web boy. That's what I will call myself from now on to shorten
Web
the
boys.
Intro. Devin Booker has scored 50 points or more in back-to-back games. To no surprise, this has led to people in the outer realms of the world, a.k.a. the realms in which Phoenix Suns basketball did not exist 5 days ago. Now it exists for them, and they feel they need to say things. If you are newish to the podcast, you're probably not going to remember we... At the start of this...
Vowed never to do this discussion again.
At the start of this... And we're not going to. At the start of the season, this year or last year, it might have been this year, but the time it goes by so slow with this team. It was Ben Golliver, Sports Illustrated, kind of was like a prominent voice to do like... Actually, Devin Booker's not good. And it was such a hardcore, I am right, you guys are wrong stance that we felt the need to actually really go into the argument, and we did so in saying, this is the last time we're going to talk about this ever. That is still true. We are not going to have the actual discussion here and talk about how he's obviously good at basketball and all those types of things, but people are writing their takes now, and they sure weren't writing Suns takes a month ago, and I understand like this is one of the biggest stories in the NBA right now, so people feel the need to write about it or being asked to write about it, and they have to, and I understand that element of it, but at the same time, there are... Andrew Sharp wrote a column today. I did not read it. I just read the takes from it on Twitter, which is what everyone should always do with everything, right? And basically, what I got from it was that he claimed, I believe is what people are saying, is that like he will never be the best player on a 50-win team or more, and he's not like a superstar. It was something like that.
And his was more... His and Andy Bailey's, who writes for Bleacher Report, who had a very... Do you call it salacious in this? I don't know. A headline that was like, he makes this much money, he's not good headline, but both of their takes were more middle ground, and it's more about... Like, they admit, like, the context around the Suns is awful. But once you say that, that's all you need to say. That's all I'll say about it. Like, they started a bunch of 22, 21, and 20-year-olds. And if you just watch Devin Booker, he's really good. That's all I'll say.
I'm not even going to say anything on it at all. This is the best I've seen him look as a scorer in back-to-back games. It is, I still think the 70 was when he was at his apex because he scored 70. It was stat chasing, but he was still just hitting ridiculous shot after ridiculous shot in that game throughout. I don't think this is the absolute best he has ever played in one game, but with that being said, he followed it up with 50 after scoring 59 in Utah. Do we want to hit on the Jimmer circus or no? This is right in the same lane of like, I don't really
funny.
Want to talk about this. It's funny.
Dude, it's funny that you can give the context later, but he didn't play at all. This is being recorded after the Wizards loss at home. He just didn't play. It's really funny that Igor has had such a short leash with him. That's all I'll say. And he's behind Tyler Johnson, who's not healthy, but D'Anthony Melton, Oladipo, Jamal Crawford. Let's just say if you can't get minutes over them, it's not looking good for you, bud.
Or, in conspiracy theory alley, the two games that he played, on the road against Sacramento, the team that drafted him, where he has many supporters, which was clear when he came in and got a lot of cheers, and then in Utah, obviously, the BYU connections, and the fact that they were losing their mind whenever he touched the ball or whenever he tried to score, and they seemed to be more fascinated by him scoring than Devin Booker scoring, and that turned into Jimmer having his own moment. overshadowing Booker in his own light, and only his own light, and then all the lights around him from all those Jimmer maniacs, I guess. It was ridiculous. It was not embarrassing, but I wrote about it in my recap for the Washington game that didn't even feel like a basketball game at one point, because there was one point where Booker got triple teamed. He got through it and then just took this really awkward one-footed runner that was nearly he airballed. And it was like, man, this is just kind of getting ridiculous. This, I don't even know what this is right now. I don't know. It's not really a basketball game because Utah just ran the score up. It was a scene. So those were the last two games, I guess. There is nothing really to draw from this time of play, unfortunately, because the Suns are missing four rotation players. And when you take away four rotation players from a bad team, guess what? They're probably going to lose out the rest of the year.
Devin Booker looks really good is my takeaway.
He looks really good. He needs help.
He's a good basketball player.
He's...
Do you think he's not, Kellen?
He's a great basketball player. That's why I think he's not a good basketball player. He's a great basketball player. Okay. Do we want to even keep talking about Suns basketball at this point, or do we just move on to March Madness? Because we both were watching quite a bit.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Let's talk about that. It was fun. There really is no way to talk about the 50 and the 59, honestly. Other than just
Can I just say one thing, I guess?
No, yeah, go
ahead.
I
forgot this. On the Booker point, don't come at Devin Booker with stuff about mid-range inefficiency. If you look at true shooting percentage and why he's been able to score a lot, it's foul line, and he's more efficient than Jordan and LeBron in these... Well, not Jordan, I don't think. He's more efficient than LeBron, up there with Jordan at the same age. So it's moot. There are a lot of moot points when you talk about and you just stretch and try to say he's not good.
Yeah, and I think the last thing I'll say is that I kind of glossed over it, but the difficulty of the shots that he was making, this extends to a point I've been making all year, that he is getting really good at just hitting tough shots.
Yeah.
And he was forced to hit a lot of tough shots in the second half of these games, or even the last three quarters, really, when it was clear that he had it going. Because he had 18 in the first quarter against Washington. But those were kind of two... They were two ridiculous games in their own way. The Utah game was just a blowout. And then Washington, so six total players on the two sides combined missing that would be in the rotation for those teams. I counted the 23 players that played in that game. It definitely wasn't 23, but it was somewhere around like 19 or 20 players that played in that game. I counted like 13 guys who I would qualify as like G League talent, basically.
Yeah.
And over half the players that played in that game were around that caliber of player, and it was rough to watch, and that's kind of why I'm not even trying to say like it doesn't count or whatever or anything like that, but it was just weird to take the 50 plus in both games into the 70. Felt like a moment for me. It felt like a real, true, honest moment in Boston and everything. And this didn't feel like that as much. I don't know. That's just the way I'm personally feeling about it, you know?
I was just enjoying it because I...
Me too.
I will watch it. And for that team, even the Washington game was actually really fun to watch, despite who was on the court. Like, Beal was going at him. Thomas Bryant kills the Suns. And also, Devin Booker got his teammates two wide open looks late. They made one of those two shots, could have forced overtime. So it was, I don't know. It's fine.
Yeah. I already hate my take, by the way. But the Utah game just had the Jimmer semantics, and then this was just a back-and-forth game where neither team could pull away because they weren't good enough to do so. And he was remarkable, though. He's amazing. He's a great, fantastic basketball player who is well worth the money that they gave him. And I'm very excited to see what he can do next year. This should have been the main thing we talked about anyway. He's healthy now. He hadn't played 15 games in a row all year until now. He's played 19 games in a row right now without avoiding like just stubbing his toe into a door or just landing
falling
wrong
off at the bar stool at high five or whatever.
Yeah, landing wrong on his lower back.
Unicycle.
Oh, the unicycle, of course. Who could forget? There were some other... I'm like...
We should make a tournament bracket of weird storylines for the Suns. We should have done that. I hate people make tournament brackets of things, but...
There was like rankings of the last year. It was like the Fultz forgot how to shoot was the number one moment. And there was... were so many moments where you're like, how is J.R. Smith throwing soup at someone number 15? And then you looked at 14 through 1 and you're like, oh, that's why it's number 15. I think we could do that for the Suns on its own. It's been a lot to handle. This period of time has been interesting to watch for the NBA draft because March Madness is here, and you can say that every year, but I believe that this is, I haven't compared it to past years, but certainly compared to the last 2 years, you've been able to get more out of March Madness than you have pretty much at any other time, because the three of the top 6-7 prospects, if you really want to be negative about Cam Reddish, play on the same team. And then there are, of course, other names in there. Jarrett Culver, they are still in the tournament. Texas Tech is still in the tournament. Who else am I missing here? There's obvious names. There's North Carolina, who's got Nasir Little and Kobe White.
Yeah.
I'm really blanking right now.
Culver, Gonzaga has a couple guys who are kind of, one's going down, one's going up. Yeah, do you want to start with Duke?
I mean the overall point I was trying to make in my inability to think of names for some reason, Ja Morant, we saw that he is obviously out of the tournament now. It did not go well for him against Florida State. DeAndre Hunter is on Virginia. They are still in. And there are some other like names like Little and Nikhil Alexander Walker on Virginia Tech. They are still in, and that is who
I need to watch him.
That is who Duke plays. And I'm very interested to see how he looks, because like you, I haven't seen much of him. I've seen probably like 2 or 3 games of him, but he's got some interesting qualities about him that could be in the lottery. Start with Duke?
Yeah. Zion's good.
Yeah, what do you think about RJ? I don't even think we need to talk about Zion. Zion's the number one guy.
RJ's the same. He hasn't really... His stock hasn't changed for me, except Ja Morant has helped his stock and probably jumped him in my head to be like a pretty solid number two. RJ, I just don't know what he is beyond a scorer. Like, I think he has really good defensive upside. Like, if you're talking positionless basketball, like, 2 years ago, I thought he was a two guard. Now it's like, dude, this guy could guard 1 through 4 in the NBA. He's rebounding. He can defend to some degree. Obviously, he has a long way to go there, but like physically, he can. He chucks too much. Like, that's consistent throughout every game. Like, he's taking bad shots. And I think I said it on Twitter once. He passes well and he's unselfish, but he passes as if like no one else is on the court. It's like they're running a drill to run their plays and he'll just make a kick out, and it's like, well, why'd you kick it out? You had a drive open, or you had another guy open on the weak side, like standing in the corner. Like, don't know what his decision making is about.
We mentioned good floor, like guy has great floor IQ, vision, floor sense. Like, he does not.
No,
at all. It's pretty bad.
He's unselfish. Like, he doesn't get tunnel vision even. It's just like this weird, I don't know what you call it, perplexing decision making.
I think the draft outside of Zion, the main storyline from a how do you rank these guys, how do you evaluate these guys perspective is going to be, how do you, as the person evaluating this draft, whether you're a nerd on a microphone right now like me, or you're a nerd holding a general manager spot in the NBA right now, are you going to, by the way, sorry I said nerd to those offended with the word nerd. Did you see that? The whole thing?
Oh, no.
You don't know this thing. You don't want to know this thing.
Is it people, for nerds? Is it nerd stuff, Kellen?
Someone on Jazz would have got offended. He was like, yo, it's funny, but not really funny that people say nerd and geek and stuff. Like, that's actually really offensive, and tried to be offended by being called a nerd. And then everyone responded by calling him a nerd, which was, I love Twitter. Okay.
Off the rails. Here we go.
So I think how you look at these guys for what they... This is going to sound really dumb, but I'm going to get there. Stick with me, people. You guys trust me at this point, right? Do you trust me, Kevin?
I don't know.
So how these guys start off in terms of what their overall skills are at this moment, what they have going for them in terms of their overall profile as a prospect.
Okay.
What do you build them on? I think that is going to determine how these guys go. I don't think that RJ's stats or Ja Morant's stats or Cam Reddish's stats or any of these, I don't think they really matter that much, and that sounds like I'm making an argument for Barrett and Reddish. But what I'm saying is, can you look past Cam Reddish's bad year? He's had a bad year at Duke, and see this guy for what he is, which is that he is a 6'9" wing who might be a point forward. Like, he has point forward skills. He has the skills to guard four positions. He has the shot right now to become a prolific three-point shooter. Now, is prolific going to mean he's taking seven attempts a game and shooting 35%, or he's shooting 40%? We won't know yet. But he has the potential and the ability to do so. Some of the stuff you just mentioned with RJ, there are people shaking their head who have RJ ninth on their board or whatever, or saying defensive upside. Are you kidding me? Have you seen him play defense? Or saying playmaking upside. Are you kidding me? Have you seen him playmake? But the potential is there. And I extend this point to Ja, where I say Ja has much, much more shown his potential to completely dominate games.
Yeah.
He has much more shown that if he adds his jumper, he is unstoppable. He has shown that when he is able to, in the first round game against, I'm blanking on who they played, Marquette.
Yeah.
If he is able to corral his decision-making a little bit and just control the game, control it instead of just trying to dominate it, he is fantastic. You compared him to, in a text to me, you kind of compared him to like Steve Nash with the way he was running pick and rolls. That is not something you will say lightly, I will say lightly, or anyone listening to this podcast will say lightly. But the way he was gliding around and seeing things, there was a little bit of that there. I say a little bit so people don't get offended. We are not comparing him to Steve Nash. We are just saying in one particular part of the floor, there was a slight glance that it looks similar to him.
If we're sticking with him, like, I meant that, I think Sean Marion told me, I was writing on Steve Nash a long time ago when Sean Marion was on the Mavs, and I was like, what made Steve Nash's passing like so unique or different or whatever? And he's like, it was just timing. Like, Steve Nash's, lots of his passes weren't difficult. They were just in pick and rolls, and it was just the exact moment when there's an avenue to get a pass off. He knew the avenue, he knew the timing, and he knew where he was going with it. And Morant had a couple passes in that first game when he was just toying with Marquette. He was just waiting until the guy who hedged on him turned his back immediately, and then he had a path to get to the rim roller or something like that. You didn't see that as much against FSU, but that's because FSU was just so long and really just clamping down on his teammates, and he didn't have that ability. And he came out and he was chucking, because I think he knew, like, I need to score in this one, unlike the Marquette game. But the Marquette game did show, like, I like his tempo more than I thought I did.
Yeah.
Like, offensively, he knows how to control, calm down, real point guard stuff. It's not just like he's attacking like Russell Westbrook in college was, like, volatile, like,
maniac,
out of control maniac guy. And he kind of still is, but...
But he doesn't do that enough.
Yeah.
He still has... The play I'm going to reference until the end of time was when I watched him, I think, against Auburn, and there was 4 seconds left on the shot clock, and he did that thing where he pump faked and he tried to pivot inward and step around his defender and take a shot, but instead of taking a shot, he tried to lob it off the backboard to himself from the 3-point line. And he does stuff like this all the time. I feel like I am trapped somewhere and no one knows I exist, and like this. Not that I exist, that this point of view exists, and people just ignore all the times that he makes these really, really dumb plays.
Yeah.
They are dumb. On a scale of one to dumb, they are super dumb. Idiot plays. They're bad. And I'm emphasizing this because I just don't see people just say, yeah, he turns the ball over because he has to do literally everything. Well, if you ask him not to do literally everything, doesn't that increase the... Okay, so if he's doing literally everything, those 5 really dumb plays are made up for by the fact that he makes 26 other amazing plays or 35 other amazing plays. But what if he's only making 15 really great plays now because he has the ball left and those 3 or 4 turnovers are still in? Now those turnovers account for more of his usage.
To go back to your point, though, it's if like DeAndre Ayton had these times, and it's kind of in the same vein where he would just take plays off on defense or whatever in college. If you coach him, and I think to the broader perspective, it's going to be interesting to watch this draft class, because you're going to find out whether Team A or Team B, whether the Phoenix Suns or the Sixers or the Spurs can develop talent. And like Cam Reddish, can you bring the most out of him and teach him how to play defense? Like, I think the Spurs could do that. I think the Thunder could do that. Can the Suns do that? I don't know. Could the Boston Celtics do that? Yeah, probably. So I think that's kind of what you were saying earlier, just about this draft class, where these guys have these habits and they have these really raw skill sets and they don't play perfect basketball right now. But which guys are like wired correctly and which teams can develop them is going to be the challenge. And that's why there's so many questions after Zion.
To take it back to what I was trying to say, I think the main thing I'm saying is that I still think this draft sucks. I think that...
Well, yeah.
There are people... Dan Bickley, to call out one of our own, wrote an amazing, I think one of the best things we've had all year, on the Suns and the Jimmer thing, and just being like, I'm done with you guys now. Like, I'll see you guys at the draft, but that Jimmer thing was a mess, and I'm done. Like, that's... I'm done watching you guys. And I think there was a really smart way of him saying it. But in there, he said that he believes that Zion and Ja Morant will be better than anyone from the 2018 draft class. And that's where I go back and backpedal. Do I think there's some argument to Ja is his value matches what you would normally want out of the number two overall pick? I think if you have a certain evaluation of Morant, and you're able to see him in a different way than I do, at least, I think there's something to that. I still don't think that's the case. I think he's next to RJ and Culver for me in their own tier.
Do you want to talk about Culver? Because
he's the guy to me where if you just look at, he didn't have a good game in the second round. He shot like 6 of 17, I believe. But they advanced, and that's great news because I want to keep seeing him play. But the way that I've described him is every time I watch him, nearly everything that he does looks like it's in the NBA. Whether it's the way that he kicks out to shooters or the way that he just keeps the ball moving in that way. He hit a like post fadeaway at the start of that game. And then against in the first round, he had a couple of moves and finishes around the rim where you look at those and it just looks like something you see in the NBA. You know what I mean?
To your point about this draft class not being good, everyone got really excited over the Culver fadeaway in the post. DeAndre Ayton was doing that like last week. And
yeah.
He's 7 feet tall. Yeah. So that's kind of what we're working with here. But I really like Culver. I think he's like number three now in like my mind. Like, he just does so many different things.
But to my point, again, I think that is a guy... You look at in Culver, and he has, I think people are getting mixed up again. I just really disagree with people coming on strongly about this class lately. And I think that you look at him and say he has star upside. Mo Bamba had star upside. Like, Michael Porter Jr. had star upside. And I think that's the kind of range we're actually talking about with guys like Culver and guys like Morant, where you look at the back half of that group from last year. I don't think any of these guys, comparing it to last year, I think Doncic, Ayton, Trey, Triple
Jackson.
J, Bagley, I think Michael Porter Jr., I think all six of those guys, I actually, and Carter, that's seven.
Yeah.
I think all seven of those I would take number two in this draft in a heartbeat.
Do you even think, people have brought this up, where they're like, we don't need Zion. Like, some people will say, Ja Morant, because the Suns need a point guard. But Zion, I don't even think is a... I don't think he's going to be a star. I think he's going to be... I keep comparing him to Draymond because I think he's a glue guy. I don't think he's a number one option.
He's an all-star glue guy, though. He's a guy that makes all-star teams, but he's not averaging 30.
Like Iguodala, Draymond. I don't know who else to put in that kind of unique space.
To be clear, people are thinking of like Draymond and Andre Iguodala now. You're talking like the peak of their powers when they were... Just to make sure people don't...
Athletic
absolutely.
But even him, he's not your... When everyone's like, what Devin Booker is, he's not even that. So I think that's where people are getting a bad start and even judging this draft class. Like, he's a clear number one, and he's a all-star role player, maybe.
You would be slightly worried, then, if he landed somewhere like New York or... who are the other teams? Like, Chicago, I guess, where he doesn't really have a ton of help.
There's potential there. Like, yeah. He showed so much, just like one or two dribbles, make a move, and you're an explosive athlete. You could do a lot with that because he's a creative finisher in the air, but it's just a set shot. He doesn't have a lot. His passing is good. It's not elite like Ben Simmons elite from a unique position.
It's elite from a 6'8", 280 guy doing it. It's not elite from a taking everything into consideration, comparing him to everyone.
So, this people get off on a bad foot in this draft class just there, even, to me.
Yeah, I actually slightly disagree. I'm a bit higher on Zion, and he's not the reason I think this class sucks. I think he is, and again, this is just a podcast about me talking about how much I hate other people's draft opinions, I guess, but I think... there are misconceptions about this is good value for the number one overall pick, because you got to look back and just the number one pick is pretty good, guys. You look back at all the guys that have gone number one, it's pretty great. A lot of really, really good players have been picked number one. But I think he is a guy where I look at him and say, I'll be the first to say it. The Simmons Ingram draft, I did not think like I thought that was a draft where you didn't want to have number one. I didn't think that was it. And I was super wrong on that, obviously. I thought last year was one, obviously, whether you took Ayton or Doncic, I thought both of those guys were worthy of the number one pick.
Yeah, that was different.
But this year, I think he is...
Fultz ball draft at the top looks like it to me.
I had Fultz there.
Yeah.
And I was super high
and
on Fultz.
And then it was like, I don't know.
But I've got Zion there. I don't really know what I'm going to do, and this is the harshness of... doing this stuff and why I can't wait for the Suns to win 40 games so I can stop having people take my big board for so much. Can't believe you had this guy at 4 and this guy at 2. I really don't see a difference between 2 and 4 in this draft right now, and that's Jaw, Culver, and Barrett. And then I have Cam Reddish and like DeAndre Hunter like slightly behind them. Not in the same tier as them, but just right next to them. And then that's where I think the draft really drops off even more. At that point, I think DeAndre Hunter is like a really nice like 11th pick, Donovan Mitchell type pick in a lot of drafts, and he might go in the top 5 of this draft.
Yeah, I think like Brandon Clark's a guy who.
Yeah, we should talk about the other guys now. Yeah,
he's a guy who could jump up because he was just a transfer, a guy who's playing for a really good team. Everyone knew it. Everyone was on Hachimura for Gonzaga. And then Brandon Clark has put up ridiculous numbers all year long. He put up, 36, I believe, in their last game, playing against a zone, and he's like a springy big man who just ate them alive inside. But he's a guy who isn't going to be a star. He's not going to be an all-star, but he's really good at certain things, and he could find his way in the top 10 or even top 8 if things keep going Gonzaga's way and he keeps playing well. So... to me, that's kind of where we're at with this draft. Like, that's realistic at this point. And he wasn't on draft boards at all, I don't think, because he was at San Jose State before this year. So it's just so many things that you don't know what's going to happen after top 4 or 5.
Draft Twitter, a lot of draft Twitter has him top 5.
Really?
Because that's, again, to your point, that's how this draft is. He's the type of guy where you can look at him and say, yeah, he's top 5. He has really outstanding touch around the rim. Obviously, the main thing about him is that he's super explosive. He's a really great shot blocker. I hesitate to say he has the best like defensive profile overall in this draft, because I think Matisse Thybulle is just a god at defense. He is incredible. And maybe that's... and I think the interesting thing to talk about him is like if the zone actually maximizes him... and maybe he's not as great in man, and we're just not going to know. Some teams have to figure that out. Yeah, Thybulle. Yeah. Because like in that zone, it's so perfect for him just to be able to really like command the whole thing. Like,
yeah.
Shouts to Hopkins is the coach there, I believe.
Oh. Yeah. What's his first name?
but he's like, he's won Pac-12 coach of the year, like back-to-back years. And like that, just a really smart way of using him. Clark, and he can switch. I think that's another important thing with Clark is that he's got this explosiveness, sure, but I think he's a lot more mobile than someone like Jordan Bell. Jordan Bell runs like a 75-year-old man. Brandon Clark does not run like that.
Oh, it's Mike Hop. Yeah, I don't know why I couldn't think of the name Mike.
I couldn't either. I was there with you. But as you wrote, there is some slight Sean Marion equity in him. Just in pogo stick, all around the everywhere place, really good rebounder, good touch. But he's the type of guy where he might go 8 or 9 or 10, and I'm not even sure if he's like a guy you evaluate as like a starter.
He doesn't have skills really.
Yeah.
But he does all these things and gets numbers, yeah.
Who is your favorite guy? And I think we can extend this outside of March Madness, though I don't think we're really going to. Who is the guy outside of the clear names that like so that top six that you like? That is someone that you
writing that thing after the second round, I want to watch Alexander Walker more because he's not a great athlete. He's what I think like 6'4", but he's a really good passer, really smooth scorer. Like he kind of reminds me of just not that he's Devin Booker, but like in how he scores. He's creative. He scores in a lot of different ways. And then, like, his last game, he was not really in it, couldn't get off shots, and had 6 assists. They're playing Duke, right? Mm-hmm. So I would say if you want to evaluate the Duke wings and also look at him, that would be an interesting game. Because, he's a sophomore, and he's the type of guy with a good performance here. Someone might be like, oh, maybe he's not a top 20 guy. He might be a top 10 guy. So...
I'll hit on Thibault quickly before
you love that
talking
guy.
About dude. So just to reiterate here, 3.4 steals and 2.3 blocks a game. Those are not per 40 numbers. That is per game.
Yeah, he plays like on the top of this weird zone. I guess it's like Syracuse's zone, probably
where he'll almost go out to half court, but then he'll also cover the free throw line somehow at the same time. And watching him play defense is confusing because I bet if you watch him for the first time, you're like, this is the guy that's good at defense because he doesn't really move that much. He actually like stands still quite a bit.
Yeah.
But he does like these kind of jump cut glidey kind of things around that zone that is his own zone, like the free throw line to half court essentially, and just makes plays all over the place and just basically shuts down the entire area by himself. There's been some encouraging developments for him offensively, which need to happen because he's 22.
It was bad early on this year, but...
And his jumper is kind of there. It's there. There's something to work with, at least. So I think he's a guy to obviously keep an eye on with how valuable... I didn't even say it in the RJ thing, but I've said it in a previous episode. The reason why I have RJ and Culver and Reddish and Hunter, those guys, slightly higher than I normally would is because I think the most valuable thing in the NBA right now is guys who are 6'7 and above, because they, in between like 6'7 and 6'10 with the quickness, of course, and the perimeter skills, because if you can play the 2 and the 3, because there's like really no difference really that much anymore, I guess.
No.
Because if you're like a 3 that's big, you're kind of playing the 4 now anyway. And then if you can be a small ball 4 in some cases, there's so much value there for teams to have you. The Suns have 3 of those guys right now, and I mean like Josh Jackson kind of is... I don't know where he is on that spectrum exactly, but Oubre and Bridges certainly are in there. And that's where I think Barrett, Culver, and a guy like Thibault for sure is right on there.
Yeah.
Coby White is a guy to watch for me because I think that he is... The way I wrote about him is that he's on the Colin Sexton paradigm of Jamal Crawford and Lou Williams, being that he's being looked at as a point guard coming out of this draft, but he's just a scoring combo guard and people just are going to be slow on it. But the thing about those guys is if they start to develop passing, all of a sudden you've got a guy who could just be a monster offensively. If you can just get to, and this is very, very extreme example, but give me a second. Kyrie was low-key on that paradigm a little bit at Duke. He didn't really show a ton of point guard stuff there.
He might have been the off-guard even because they had Nolan Smith, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Shouts now to coach. Derek Williams taking that boy out. See you later. With White, if he can... Kyrie is like really, really developed as a passer and just like a floor general and things like that. And I think that's the thing with this type of guy is that... I don't think Colin Sexton's ever going to average more than like 7 assists a game in the NBA. I'm looking forward to him proving me wrong. but White kind of shows a little bit more than that, in my opinion. And the important difference between him and Sexton pre-draft, and I'll say pre-draft because Colin Sexton can actually shoot now, apparently, is that Coby White can really shoot that thing. He can really shoot it. You don't think so?
You don't like it? I'm not a Coby White guy. He's not athletic enough, explosive enough. Like, I think once you talk about if you take his three away, then it's like, what is this guy? I'm not sure. He's big, though. I just feel like he's a Kendall Marshall scoring version.
Oh, no. No wonder you don't like him. I think that he has enough shake to offset the elite athleticism, and I think he has more quickness than you're giving him credit for, perhaps.
Yeah. That's pretty mean what I just said. I apologize.
But is this me saying that like he can explode off the dribble and finish at the rim? Not really. He's more of pull up from 15 feet, which again is where I go back to Lou Williams and Jamal Crawford. But those guys, man, I mean, in that role, if you can really, and that's the top of the food chain, of course, those two guys, but if that role is important, and then if you can just develop a little bit more, the thing that I saw on ESPN and the Draft Express guys was that he has actually, the concerning thing is that against teams that are, there was a way of them breaking up like good and bad teams by quadrant thing or whatever. And it's like he roasts bad teams. That's where he's averaging like 7 assists a game or whatever. But against good teams, it's like he's averaging 2 assists a game and shooting 38% or whatever.
Yeah.
So he's a freshman though, and he would take time, but he has a size too. He's 6'5".
Yeah.
He's got to put, and he's already 185. Like he's not in the De'Aaron Fox, oh God, you're 150 pounds apparently territory. But this is a very long-winded way of me saying that I like him as a potential like lottery guy.
Nasir Little has had numbers lately. His teammate at North Carolina again.
Yeah.
This is I like half the guys I wrote about from the second round were guys who went against zone defenses and just like caught the ball 5 feet from the basket and scored a lot. So it's like I don't know how much to take of this, but hey. It's good that you're actually doing something now, guy. Also, Little like hit a quick like catch and shoot three, and like even had a pull up, and had a nice lefty scoop, I think. So there was like signs that he's like a basketball player. That sounds mean. Also, this is just a mean podcast about this draft, huh?
It is, yeah. Let's say the Suns pick 7th.
Oh.
Who are you picking? Those six guys
just
are off.
Just assuming who's like 5'6".
Reddish, Hunter, and then the four at the top. So Culver, Morant, Zion, and RJ. Who are you selecting? Kevin Zimmerman.
Oh.
Because this is a thing. If they finish 3rd, which is where they're at right now, he says while he Googles Tankathon.
Oh.
They are 2nd right now. The Suns are 2nd right now, so that the furthest they can drop is actually 7th. So they can still drop to 7th.
There's still like a, what, 20% chance of that?
Yeah. Cleveland is at 19 wins. The Suns are at 17. And then the Chicago is at 21.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to be safely, but they still could pick 7th.
Okay. I was... Honestly, that's like... Can you give me a list of names? Because I might be forgetting people.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I got you.
I was like going to go Brandon Clark, but if you knew you were losing Kelly, then I would go Brandon Clark.
So here are the like next 10 guys, essentially, that ESPN has going that aren't those guys. They actually have Darius Garland 4th, the point guard out of Vanderbilt. I have watched a couple games of him. I did not like what I saw, but with ESPN, smart people, Jonathan Givney, Mike Schmitz, shouts out Mike Schmitz, Valley Roots. With them putting him 4th, I'm going to have to go back and watch a lot more because apparently I'm missing something. Shouts out to Dumboya, I believe that's how you say his name. Probably not. He's the top international prospect. I watched a couple games of him and absolutely despised it. Just didn't like it. Jackson Hayes, I don't think they're going to be drafting a center. Romeo Langford, Coby White, Kevin Porter Jr. Yes, we're already at Kevin Porter Jr., Kevin. PJ Washington, Bol Bol, Keldon Johnson, Rui Hachimura. Here's Nasir Little, Talen Horton Tucker, Cameron Johnson... is someone I want to talk about next week if North Carolina keeps playing, because I actually like him. Tyler Hero, there's Alexander Walker, Brandon Clark, and KZ Okpala from Stanford.
My goodness.
Yes. This draft ain't it. It's not.
Don't fall to 7.
Do not fall to 7.
Is that where our tiers are? Like, we can disagree about the 2 and 3 and 4, but that's like second tier ends at 6 then.
Yes, I actually have like a rough draft on my big board, okay. And I have after those
it 6. Sounds bad, Kellen.
After those 6, I have Jackson Hayes, Kevin Porter Jr., and Darius Garland as their own tier, and that's like way down there. And then I get into Kobe White. Batadze is an overseas guy, a big that I really liked last year, and from what I've seen this year, he's really improved. I watched a bit of him a while ago. That's where I have Clark, Thibault, Romeo Langford, and I would say Jonte Porter here, but he tore his ACL again, so just awful for him.
Can I go Alexander Walker then? From what I've seen, I need to watch more, but I can change my mind later. Garland could be up there, I guess.
Yeah, going off my own tiers, I would have Garland in that tier, so I would say Garland, but that's rough. Yes, do not fall to 7. This is what you should learn from this draft, unless something really weird happens and someone comes out of nowhere. Do not fall to 7. Speaking of falling, the Phoenix Suns have lost 5 in a row. They have 6 games left in the season. They have 4 left at home. Memphis, Cleveland, Utah, New Orleans, so there are certainly opportunities to win there. But with that being said,
no Kelly. Tyler Johnson was wearing a pink and black suit, which I appreciated, but that's not helpful.
Matching kicks too.
Yeah.
Good for him. I mean, you have to. When you go pink and black, you have to have everything figured out.
Go for it.
They end in Texas, at Houston, at Dallas. Kevin, will the Suns win a game the rest of the season?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah.
New Orleans? Cleveland?
Did you say Memphis, too?
Memphis.
Memphis or New Orleans, yeah.
I'm going to call my shot on Cleveland.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to call it. No Marquise Chris revenge game. Sorry, folks. Not going to happen. Sorry, Rich. That's it. Leave us a review if you want. That's on iTunes and all those other Stitcher places, I guess.
The internet is a broad place.
This is a very encouraging way of me saying review the podcast if you'd like. If not, follow us on Twitter at least. That's at Empire of the Suns. You can find me and Kevin's handles in the bio to follow us too if you want. We'll be back next week to talk about more Suns and more March Madness. We'll see you then.
See ya.
I hate this outro.